Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. Watch, chop, retrofit.
So epic. You listen to this on your headphones and go running?
Constantly.
Okay.
Oh. You can tell I haven't been running. All right, with that amazing intro, I want to say welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. It's a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs like us decide who is recasting those iconic roles? I should also mention our online presence at Twitter. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And then also our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. How are we doing on those emails, Andrew? You've been keeping up with the email account? Have we gotten any?
Has anyone hacked the account?
All right, cool. We've been getting some emails. I'm glad to hear it. We need to possibly glean some suggestions for new episodes because I'm not getting a lot of good feedback about the horse movies episode that's coming up.
But
I think maybe we're going to do something else instead of the horse movies.
So Black Beauty, and what's another horse movie?
The White Stallion.
That's not a movie.
No, the Black Stallion.
And from Snowy River.
Oh, yeah. So there are horse movies, but
there,
I was going to have trouble recasting horses.
Ooh, really? Mr. Ed's dead, I guess.
So once again, that email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And my name is Travis. I will be your host and also your commanding officer, because in honor of Veterans Day, we are doing war movies. We will be discussing some classic war movies. And I am joined, as always, here in the shop by our engineer, editor, communications officer, Andrew Tay.
Yes, sir.
Signing on. And also, we are extremely excited to welcome back to the show. It's been a little while, not that long, but a little while. You are you're getting back in the groove of things after the nuptials.
It's been a while.
And everything. It's been a while. But my second in command on this mission today, it's your boy Mark.
Heyo.
He's here. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for doing this tonight. I know it's like your one night off of the week.
That's true. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So a further description of the show. We talk about remakes a lot, but it's all hypothetical. It's an experiment of the mind. There's a quote that comes to mind, and it's one by an artist named Paul Gauguin. He was a French artist. He did some really great post-impressionist paintings. He also did some other crazy shit where he like moved to Tahiti and married a 14-year-old girl.
That is crazy.
He's probably the guy who cut off Van Gogh's ear in real life, because they lived together at that time in Arles and were known to have sword fights.
They're roommates?
In quotation marks. No, really, he probably did cut off his ear. But he said, art is either plagiarism or revolution. And I think that we've come to a time where that's absolutely true. Anything that is being produced is either based on something from the past, or it's completely groundbreaking and avant-garde and just blows your mind. It's a revolution. So that's the kind of thing that we're really in favor of. We're not pro-remake or pro-sequel-dependent culture. Enough about that, Travis. Rant over. And so, at this point, we're going to go ahead and do our energy drink check-in. We've got a couple of different ones here. We've got a Starbucks brand, Double Shot Energy. And it's got other stuff besides coffee in it. Oh, it's also white chocolate.
It's the white chocolate variety.
White chocolate one, yeah. They named it after me. That's my rap alter ego.
Everyone calls you that.
Yeah, everyone knows. And Michelle was mad because I wouldn't open it before we left home. She's Michelle, like, no, we're drinking that now.
Michelle, your wife.
My lovely wife. my lovely wife, Michelle, who's not here with us this evening. But she wanted to drink this before we left, and I said no. We're drinking it here tonight. go ahead and try some of that. And
milky.
It's supposedly like a cappuccino, white chocolate, naturally and artificially flavored Starbucks Double Shot Energy. It's got guarana, B vitamins, ginseng, energy coffee beverage. So
not carbonated at all.
It's not carbonated. It's pretty flat.
Completely still.
I could mix some of this soda water with it.
I would not recommend it.
Is this sugar free?
No, it is not sugar free. Actually, I do not think that either of our energy drinks are sugar free tonight.
Oh, but the whole can's only 210. That's not too bad.
That's not too bad, and we're sharing it between the three of us.
Yeah.
I kind of like this. I've been on an iced coffee kick lately.
Iced coffee's good
in general, and cold coffee.
Do you make your own, or are you buying it?
I've been making my own.
Yeah.
And in fact, I've been doing the hack your Keurig trick where you use your own.
You leave old coffee in your Keurig?
Use your own little mesh screen filter and you take the top of an actual Keurig cup, a K cup.
Okay.
You cut that off and you stick it in there with it.
Lovely.
And it tricks the Keurig machine into thinking you're using real K cups.
Oh, you've got the Keurig 2.0 that needs that little hologram?
Yeah, it's not a hologram. It's like a sticker. What do they call the RFD?
Yeah, I thought you could just like tape the label to the lid of it. Is that not true?
That's basically what I'm doing. Okay. I'm just sticking it in there with it.
Okay, cool.
Yes. That's the hack.
Dump the Keurig.
Also, for other tricks, check out the Anarchist Cookbook. So let's
shout out to 1996.
Let's do the second energy drink real quick. This is one that was donated to the show by frequent guest Sean, who can't be here today because he's been working on the road.
Our benevolent benefactor.
And, yeah, and he has a vested interest in the show.
Yes.
So it's called Mango Loco, or Mango Loco in English, and it's a monster. We've had a few of these on the show, but it's Monster Juice, and it's got a really cool kind of tropical motif to the label, but then you also have these Mexican Day of the Dead, like Sugar Skull, I believe they're called Calaveras.
Do you think this is in preparation for JoJo, that new Pixar movie?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I haven't.
There's no indication for it, but it's kind of Day of the Dead movie.
I've heard a little bit of hype about the show JoJo, and I think I might have seen a teaser, but I can't recall what it is right now.
Okay.
So it's an animated film, Pixar animated film, obviously. Okay. What do you guys think? Andrew's trying it.
I'm still finishing the double shot.
I really like my pronunciation, though. Mongo Loco. It reminds me of the character Mongo.
Or Hello Moto.
Chris Kattan, right?
I guess, yeah. Classic SNL. Classic SNL.
Like third wave.
Mm.
All right, so what do you guys think of that one?
I'm not a mango guy, so this really isn't doing it for me.
You know, some people are actually allergic to the skin of mangoes. Like if they peel a mango and it touches their bare skin, they break out in hives.
Who told you that?
No, that's a true fact.
I just don't believe you.
It's because the something in the skin, there's a chemical in the skin of the mango.
Okay.
And I'm one of those people. Oh my God, I'm about to go into anaphylactic shock. No, this is actually pretty tasty. I could drink this.
Sean is trying to take over your job.
It's definitely.
What's happening?
He's murdering me from He's like, yes, I left an energy
Some
drink
mango.
For you. Come and pick it up.
It just kind of tastes like carbonated OJ to me, honestly.
Or Sunny D?
Yeah, a little bit. Which is carbonated or non-carbonated OJ.
A little bit of Sunny D on that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's enough of that. I'm probably adding more material to the Department of Corrections department.
Fighting off scurvy.
Our next segment. So the first one is that I said that The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger came out in 1992. That is not correct. It came out in 1987, 5 years prior, Mark. 5 years. That's enough to make the Department of Corrections department.
Why were you talking about The Running Man?
Because it was directed by the same guy as one of our directors from the hockey episode. I think it was one of the Midnight Double Feature picks.
Cool.
And then also, I missed the opportunity to during Andrew's plug at the end of the show when he was talking about the Movember movement, hashtag Movember, I missed the opportunity to refer to your mustache as lip lettuce, which is a hockey term for a mustache. Because it was the hockey episode, so it's a missed opportunities. It's not really a correction, but that's the end of the corrections department. Sorry about those. Which brings us back to the theme of today's episode, which is In honor of Veterans Day, which is coming up this weekend. It's weird that Veterans Day is actually on a Saturday tomorrow.
Is it a Saturday? I thought it was Friday.
This year. Veterans Day observed is a Friday.
Right.
And then
Veterans Day official
is on Saturday. But in honor of that, we're talking about war movies today.
Mm.
But I think that we would probably be remiss if we didn't mention that war is bad. And so
okay.
we're not promoting the concept of war or the idea that that's a good way to solve problems or things like that. You know, like give peace a chance, obviously.
Okay.
The war is over if you want it, to rephrase. But that being said, there has been a close relationship between cinema and film and war since basically the onset of filmmaking in general. The medium has been used as propaganda. It can very easily be used as propaganda, but also as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of good war movies out there. There's some really good classic ones with some amazing iconic actors.
Like the two we're going to discuss tonight.
Mark was saying...
I'm so energized.
That one of them he liked a lot better than the other one. And I had a similar feeling. But we'll get into that in a little while. First, we've got to go on to our Midnight Double Feature, which is a segment where we go around the room
mm-hmm.
and we talk about the genre at hand, and we talk about two movies that you feel like would go really well together back-to-back, maybe with an intermission, but back-to-back in maybe even like a public setting, a double feature. So do you want to go first, or would you like me to go first on the double feature?
I'll go first. I've got it right in front of me.
Sounds good.
Okay, so... war movies, while they're pretty good, these two are slightly newer than the two we're discussing tonight.
Okay.
But I chose Catch 22 and the movie version of MASH.
Okay, yeah. So these are more like
war comedies. Yeah, okay. But the futility of war, I'd say, also.
The original MASH with Donald Sutherland,
mm-hmm.
Which then spawned the TV series.
Great movie and TV show.
With Alan Alda, both,
I have to say.
Both hilarious.
Sure.
And then the second one you said?
Catch 22.
Catch 22, is that based on the Kurt Vonnegut novel?
I'm not sure if it's Kurt Vonnegut. That might be a corrections department.
Kurt Vonnegut.
It is based on a book,
did
though.
Did write a book called Catch 22.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Who is it?
Heller? Joseph Heller?
Joseph Heller. Yeah. Okay, I was wrong. I
probably
was thinking
have
of Slaughterhouse 5.
Right.
It has a number in the title. Still, that's going into the
just
corrections
department.
Just the
one. Department.
Ooh. So, I like them both, I like both of your picks, but I don't think that I've actually seen Catch 22. Tell me a little bit about it.
I mean, basically, let's see. It's a satirical novel by Heller.
Okay.
It was published in 1961, one of the most significant novels of the 20th century.
What?
It uses a distinctive non-chronological third-person omniscient narration. This is not giving away any plot. Describing
it was a real Catch 22.
It was a Catch 22,
right?
Everybody
involved died.
Yeah, describing events from the point of view of different characters. The separate storylines are out of sequence, so the timeline develops along with the plot. And there's more to that, but I don't think you
Tell
want to hear
me
read.
Movie.
Let's see, the movie, huh? Well, okay. I didn't think you'd actually grill me on the details of this. This changes everything.
Well, I just want to know, like,
it's
what
a good
I'm getting
movie,
into
yeah.
with this double feature.
I actually recommend it. Yeah,
like,
I gotcha.
Who's the star? Just
I've known about
one.
This. Yeah, I got it. It's loading now. Here we go. A man is trying desperately to be certified insane during World War II so he can stop flying in missions.
Ah, so he's trying to act crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also a good way not to get mugged if you're in like a big city. Just
starring,
act like a crazy person.
Starring Alan Arkin.
Ah, I like Alan Arkin.
Mm-hmm. Martin Balsam. Richard Benjamin. Art Garfunkel.
Okay.
Apparently those are the top billed cast.
And who's the director?
Mike Nicholas.
Okay, I don't know him.
Yeah, I don't know him either.
All right.
And yeah, it's you know, supposed to be a pretty good war movie, kind of a comedy. He directed The Graduate. He directed The Birdcage, Charlie Wilson's War.
Oh, well, we should know his name.
Right?
All right. So you're going with a combination of satirical war comedies to kind of lighten the mood of a kind of heavy subject.
Yeah, war can be, kind of be a drag, you know.
War can be a drag, man.
As it turns out, yeah. It's not fun.
Cool. Well, on that note, I'm going to get more, even more of a drag. Both of mine
Great.
Are not comedic at all. No, there's no comedy in either of mine. They're both Vietnam era movies, which is a touchy subject. Once again, I do respect veterans, and my my dad is a Vietnam veteran.
Okay,
he actually volunteered for Vietnam.
He volunteered.
Yeah, he volunteered, which says a little bit about his character. But
does your dad listen to this podcast?
I don't think they even know.
They don't know what the words podcasts are.
I don't think they. Well, okay. They definitely don't know that. This is a podcast.
Oh. But,
the two movies that I picked for Vietnam era war movies are number one, The Deer Hunter.
Ooh, I've seen
1978.
That. Real depressing movie, that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it is. But, I mean, a lot of depressing shit comes out of war.
Most definitely.
And so this was directed by a guy named Michael Cimino, which the name didn't immediately ring a bell, but he got his big break 4 years earlier directing Thunderbolt and Lightfoot with Jeff Bridges and Clint Eastwood.
Look at all that research.
Which is like a heist heist movie. So Jeff Bridges is like a happy-go-lucky car thief, but he crosses paths with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, no.
Hardened,
dour,
famous, like, criminal.
Okay.
So it's like a buddy crook movie instead of a buddy cop movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so The Deer Hunter stars Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, and Meryl Streep in like one of her first featured stage roles. And it wasn't a very substantial role, but she was dating one of the other actors in the movie who actually, he was Fredo in The Godfather.
Oh, The Godfather.
He died immediately after making The Deer Hunter.
Oh, wow.
But he was diagnosed with cancer before making
movie.
And the studio almost tried to fire him, but Robert De Niro and Meryl Streep insisted that he stay on. And
she was a newcomer, you just said.
Yeah, she was a newcomer, but she was dating him, and Robert De Niro is also the one who like got her into the movie.
Okay.
So it's about three, like, small town guys who volunteer once again for Vietnam, and they go over there and they realize that it's not what they had signed up for. It's
a little more than they bargained for.
They got more than they bargained for. It takes place in 1968. Mike, Nick, and Steven, they're lifelong friends, and they volunteer with the support of their whole community. The movie starts with a wedding and a toast by Robert De Niro. It also ends with a toast at a funeral.
Not Russian roulette? I thought it ended with Russian roulette.
It doesn't end with Russian roulette. The end,
it's a pretty famous Russian roulette scene in that movie.
Yes, but it's not. There's multiple Russian roulette scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
We don't want to give too much away of the plot.
Gotta tease it.
Russian roulette plays a major part in the movie and the fucked upness of the movie. In Vietnam, their dreams of military honor are quickly shattered by the inhumanities of war. Even those who survive are haunted by the experience, as is Nick's hometown sweetheart, Linda Meryl Streep. Yeah, I did write down Russian roulette.
Just mention Russian roulette.
Yeah, and then the other movie, another real downer about Vietnam, is from 1989. It's called Casualties of War.
No, I've never heard of that one.
It stars Michael J. Fox.
Oh.
As well as Sean Penn.
No, Born on the 4th of July?
I didn't go Born on the 4th of July, just because I don't want to give Tom Cruise any more mentions.
Aww.
Not even on this very indie, very small
Indie's
town
a very polite way.
Podcast.
Yes.
Not indecent, indie, like independent. In this very indie podcast that he will never even hear about, I still don't want to give him any mentions.
Okay.
So.
But what has he actually done? I mean, he's a weirdo.
We did an episode about a Tom Cruise movie. So that's enough. I said his name already. Shush.
You said it three times.
So Casualties of War is directed by Brian De Palma.
Mm.
It's got an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. It stars Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn. And it's about a platoon of people in the shit in Vietnam.
Mm.
And Sean Penn is the leader, the captain of that group of soldiers. I'm probably getting a lot of like military terminology wrong, but that's okay. And his brother was killed, and he swears revenge, and he orders the guys in his command to go out into the village and procure a young Vietnamese woman that they bring back.
Oh, God. This took a really dark turn.
They proceed to hold her hostage and rape her.
Wow. At least the heroes of the picture?
Michael J. Fox tries to prevent that, but is unable to. Consoles her afterwards. And basically that's what separates him from... Like, psychologically, that's what separates him from the rest of the people.
Wow. Looking for a fun time,
yeah,
watch.
It's a really heavy heavy film, but it's based on true events. It's based on an actual event that happened called Incident on Hill 192. Also in the movie, besides Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn, John C. Reilly, John Leguizamo, and Ving Rhames.
Hmm.
All right, so... also, Sean, the brew boss, sent in some remote picks. Actually, it's just one, but he's counting it as two movies, and that is Full Metal Jacket from 1987, directed by Stanley Kubrick.
That's fair.
Because it starts
It's effectively two movies, also.
Yeah, the boot camp / advanced infantry training segment leading up to a very startling scene with Vincent D'Onofrio, and then them actually being deployed in... Vietnam, and so the drill sergeant was actually a real drill sergeant, and didn't they film that segment of the movie in like Paris Island in South Carolina?
I think so. Yeah,
another correction, but we're gonna say yes, they did. It's a Marine training place here in South Carolina. All right, so that brings us to the first movie in our feature segment, which is the recast. And we're talking about a movie called The Bridge on the River Kwai from 1957. This is a movie that I actually had seen before.
Oh, okay. And I've not seen either one of these.
I watched it when I was about 7 years old.
Oh, God.
Yeah. My dad, John, the veteran, he showed it to me. And I didn't remember a lot about it. Like, a lot of the details. I remembered the bridge. And
sure.
I remembered
the Kwai.
The Alec Guinness character. But
yeah.
Even though... It wasn't until many years later that I made the association between him and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So The Bridge on the River Kwai was from 1957. It was directed by David Lean, who was a really, really accomplished British director. He also directed Lawrence of Arabia, that was in 1962, and Dr. Zhivago in 1965, both of whom starred Omar Sharif. So The Bridge on the River Kwai has a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. And so just a little bit of a plot summary about the movie, a synopsis, not to spoil anything, but it's an adaptation of a novel by Pierre Boulez, and it's about POWs in Burma who are forced to build a bridge to aid the war effort of their Japanese captors.
And it's partially based on a true story, is it not?
I think that it was, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's based on situations that happened during that time.
Okay.
Where British and American officers plot to blow up the structure, while British and American officers plot to blow up the structure, the commander of the bridge's construction has different plans.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the movie starts out, and Alec Guinness,
the commander of the POWs,
yeah, his name is Colonel Nicholson.
Right.
He's in charge of a... whole company of British troops.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie starts out with a conflict about whether or not officers have to do manual labor, because according to the Geneva Convention, they do not. And Alec Guinness's character, Colonel Nicholson, is a by-the-book British officer.
And their captors said, screw your by-the-book.
Yes, yes. And then... eventually, after he goes through like solitary confinement in a hot box in the tropical sun,
some low level torture,
he gets out and decides, you know what? We are going to build this bridge, and we're going to build the best bridge these people have ever seen.
I mean, how spoilery are we getting here?
Well, listen, I'm not getting too spoilery.
Okay,
but this is the main motivation of his character. Is he has the honor of the British military.
I'm going to bring society to this savage area is basically what he's on about.
So he's deluded in the sense that matters at all.
Mm-hmm.
And If anything, what he's doing is aiding his captors.
Definitely.
So meanwhile, there's a specialty team that's being formed in a nearby area that's going to come in and blow up the bridge. And he has other ideas. So the three roles that we are going to recast, the first one we've already mentioned, Sir Alec Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
He was 43 at the time as Colonel Nicholson. And also, the second role is William Holden. Now, I know that in the information, the overview I originally sent you, I had William Holden listed first
mm-hmm.
because he's got top billing in the movie.
But really, it's Alec Guinness's movie.
Exactly.
For sure,
and,
yeah.
You know, that actually speaks to a little bit of trivia about the movie. Alec Guinness and the director, David Lean, did not get along during this production.
Hmm.
Even though they made six movies together. They did
they love
Great
money.
Expectations, Oliver Twist, Dr. Zhivago, we already mentioned, Lawrence of Arabia again,
wow.
And then a movie called A Passage to India, which was David Lean's last movie in 1984. But they also said it was his best since Lawrence of Arabia.
Wow.
All right. Then we've also got William Holden, who was 39 at the time. He's the American
mm-hmm.
He's one of the American captors.
He escapes.
Captives,
yeah.
Who escapes, mm-hmm. yes. He's known as Commander Shears. And then we've also got Jack Hawkins, who's the British officer who is getting the team together
mm-hmm.
to go back in and infiltrate the bridge. He played Major Warden. And he was also in Ben-Hur and Lawrence of Arabia. And then finally, we've got the Japanese commander, Colonel Saito, who is played by a Japanese actor, a long-time Japanese actor, named Sessu Hayakawa. He was 68 at the time, but he had been acting since the outset of American cinema. In fact, he was the first Asian, quote-unquote, leading man in American movies.
Hmm.
And he was very renowned for his kind of brooding good looks and also the fact that he always played a villain with kind of a sexual edge to his character.
Hmm.
So he was very, very popular with female female moviegoers in like the 30s.
Of a pushover in this.
Yeah,
ultimately.
Part
of the time, I guess. Because
he's hard at the beginning, but then he realizes that he needs the...
He softens so much, it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah.
And so, starting at the top with Alec Guinness, I'll go first since you went first in the double feature. I'm going with a British actor who is right around the same age as Alec Guinness, who was 43 at the time. I'm going with Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman
is 46 now. Very British. You can definitely see him being that kind of by the book, Queen's English stickler for detail. He was in a bunch of the Simon Pegg movies, and he was also in.
Watson in Sherlock?
He's Watson in Sherlock.
He was Arthur Dent in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Arthur Dent in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He's also in a British TV show called The Robinsons.
Mm.
And the British director, of course, is Edgar Wright. He's in a bunch of Edgar Wright movies.
Right. So
he's my pick at 46 now as Colonel Nicholson in The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Okay. So this time I did not bother to look up the ages, so it's just kind of a rough estimate.
No,
but I went for the low-hanging
just an
fruit
edge that I have.
On Alec Guinness. I went with Ewan McGregor. I mean,
okay, yeah,
Hollywood. Hollywood already picked this for us, so it's a tried.
And by that you mean
I mean Obi-Wan
in the
prequels,
the
non-canonical prequels. Yes,
yeah, I wish they were non-canonical.
I think they
man.
Are. I think they've
no,
said they are.
Not.
I'm pretty sure they have. I mean, you can't erase them from our memories. They were so good.
I wish we could do that too.
But here it is.
But you know what? That's a really good pick because I did think about the fact that. That Obi-Wan and Ewan McGregor and Obi-Wan and yeah, that's solid. I'm giving you that one.
In fact,
that is a better pick than Martin Freeman. So you won that round.
Okay, sure.
All right, moving it along.
I'll take it.
William Holden, who was 39 at the time, he played Commander Shears. He's the American guy who escapes, almost doesn't escape. He nearly dies on his his exodus. But he does make it. He gets picked up and he makes it to a kind of tropical island base.
A kind village helps him out?
Yeah, well he also...
Which plays off later in the movie, too.
He strikes up a relationship mm-hmm. with a beautiful young nurse, who I don't have her name, but it's just kind of a...
smooth guy. Yeah, he's a smooth operator.
Yeah, he manages to make out all right until they pretty much blackmail him into...
And there's a neat twist later in the movie regarding his character.
Yeah. So I went first with the last guy. Who do you have?
Okay, so I've got... good old Bryan Cranston as Holden's replacement. He's a little older than Holden was at the time, but not by that much. I think Bryan Cranston's 61. I think I actually bothered to look it up. Holden was like in his 50s somewhere.
He was 39 at
the
time.
Ooh, okay, so way off. But people play younger in general than they were. But yeah, just kind of the unassuming badass that gets things done. I mean, you know, look no further than Breaking Bad and whatnot. He can definitely command a scene. And this guy was basically the action hero of the movie when you get right down to it.
Yeah. I don't know if Bryan Cranston is an action hero.
That's true. Well,
I think I'm going to win this one.
Okay.
Let's hear it. Sam Worthington.
Sam Worthington. Okay.
Sam Worthington from Avatar.
Oh, sure.
Flash of the Titans.
Hmm.
He's 41 now.
That's so pretty good.
A little bit older than William Holden.
Mm-hmm.
2 years older.
Okay.
And they do have a little bit of a resemblance to each other.
Okay.
All right.
So yeah, you win that one for sure.
I won. All right. So this will be the tiebreaker.
Ooh, tiebreaker.
And I might have already revealed my pick earlier. So it's Jack Hawkins, who is. Well, this won't be a tiebreaker because there's another movie. There's another pick after this.
Oh, right.
Plus, this doesn't count for anything. Jack Hawkins as Major Warden. He was in Ben-Hur and Lawrence of Arabia. Has worked with David Lean before. He's a British actor. He is the guy who's putting the team together to send back to blow up the bridge. And I said his name a few minutes ago. I'm going with Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, yeah, okay.
He's 47 now, same age. Also an established British name. Mm. He can do it. He can totally pull it off.
Sure. Okay, so I have Robert Crawley, the Earl of Grantham himself, Downton Abbey, Hugh Bonneville.
Hugh Bonneville, okay. Bonneville. I can see him in my head right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could totally do it. We should mention that this character is not going on the mission himself. He's merely putting the team together to send them off.
Well, I already chose Bryan Cranston for one of them, so you know, we're stretching the limits of imagination here. Let's be real.
That's good.
It's a tie.
Yeah. Sure. Right, so the fourth role, final role for this movie is the Japanese actor that I mentioned before, Sesua Hayakawa, and he was Colonel Saito, and I went with somebody who has also played a character named Saito, and that is Ken Watanabe, who was in...
Good pick, buddy. Great pick.
The movie Inception as Saito.
Yes.
He was also in The Last Samurai. He was in Letters from Iwo Jima. He is a Japanese-American actor. He's 10 years younger than the original actor, but I think that the original actor looked younger than 68.
Wow, he was 68?
He was 68.
That's impressive.
Dude had been acting... he didn't look like a sex symbol, did he?
Not quite,
That guy was a sex symbol in, like, the 1920s and 30s, I'm telling you.
Good for him.
All right, so was that your pick?
That was my pick, Yes!
So that means I win!
No, I was going to mean you win. You just went first. Due to your random chance.
Well, we were tied.
You're so wrong.
And the one that I picked, without knowing what you picked, was the same one. Therefore, I win.
I don't think that's how rules work.
Doesn't matter.
Disagree. We'll agree to disagree on this one. Agree to disagree.
All right. Well, we can disagree to agree later that it is about time to head into our intermission. All right, Cinema Chop Shoppers. This is your host, Travis, just chiming in here at the intermission to remind you to please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. We appreciate the feedback, and any review is a good review. Also, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, give us some suggestions for themes for future episodes. I have about a year's worth planned out, but you're more than welcome to offer advice, and I'm open to suggestions as well. And as always, thank you for listening, and remember to watch, chop, retrofit.
Majority of it. Okay, yeah, I thought it was just like, yeah, it didn't go where I thought it was going to go, and it was just so depressing from top to bottom.
But that is neither here nor there. And
are we back?
We are back from the intermission.
Oh,
thank you, folks, for bearing with us during that time. But we have to, you know, take a moment in between sets and regroup and
pee break.
And we're back now. Speaking of pee breaks, we're back for our beer check-in.
All right.
And today we are drinking a beer that is guaranteed to get good reviews by everyone, I'm sure, because it's an IPA. Mm-hmm. What does that stand for?
Instant Peer Acceptance.
Exactly. It's by Caldera Brewing, which is out of my home state of Oregon. Mm. They're from Ashland, Oregon. And it is a very tasty, very kind of fruit-forward, citrusy IPA.
I have to say, it tastes a little more malty after drinking those sweet, sweet energy drinks.
Oh, that's true. You're right. That, yeah. It's probably a palate thing. We should palate probably wrecker. Do something in
have some
between.
Water or something between them.
Yeah, or maybe like some ginger or some pretzels.
That's
or something
an idea. Yeah,
in between to cleanse our palate between the energy drinks and the beer check-in.
Because that stuff's so sweet.
Yeah, I didn't have any sugar freeze today, but. This beer is good, mm-hmm. regardless. It's
I like Caldera's IPA for sure, yeah. Definitely.
And it says brewed and canned by Caldera Brewing in Ashland, Oregon. It's got a picture of a big witch's pot,
cauldron.
You know, a cauldron,
a Caldera
right?
cauldron.
So
I
guess
what
Caldera
they call it.
Is the Spanish word for a cauldron.
No, oh.
It's also the term for the pit of a volcano. But a very good beer. So that brings us to the end of our beer check-in, which brings us to, speaking of people having patience, my 2017 movie marathon. We are on day number 314 of the year.
Ooh.
I'm running out of time. I got 51 days to finish, and I'm only on movie number 290.
Now, Travis, if you don't make it at the end of the year, are you going
to
do it again the next year?
If I don't make it, I'm going to self-destruct.
Your streak is over. It's done, huh? Okay.
No, I'll make it.
Well then. Good luck.
So, movie number 290 was a documentary. I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. Movie number 290 was a documentary. It's called The Prince Story, Icon, Genius, Slave from 2017. It's a documentary about the Prince of Monaco. No, not really. It's about the musician Prince who passed away recently. Pretty good documentary, but I have the feeling there's going to be quite a few documentaries about the life of Prince. Then the second movie, or excuse me, the number 289, I'm not going to talk about because it is the second movie in our recast.
Hmm.
Number 288 went on opening night, or actually pre-opening night, for Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh.
The 2017.
Oh, you already saw that.
By Kenneth Branagh. It opened last night.
How was it?
I enjoyed it. However, I did not see the original. I had not seen.
Are you a Perrault fan in general? You're aware of him, but it's not.
I'm a fan of mysteries. Mm-hmm. I've never read an Agatha Christie book.
Fair enough.
Put it that way.
And sure.
Apparently, she was an amazingly prolific writer. And that's one of her main characters that she did a few novels with.
Prolific with, Perrault, for sure.
Yeah, and so I did enjoy the movie.
Good.
It was directed and starring Kenneth Branagh as Hercule Perrault. And
getting the most out of that movie pass, are you?
I am, yeah.
That's good.
And also an all-star cast. It hasn't been getting great reviews.
What's it at on the tomatoes?
I think it's in the 60 range.
That's like fans of the genre would enjoy.
Right, but
generally.
It's also, it technically opens tonight, so we'll see.
So it'll take a drop. That's what I'm hearing. Big drop.
Number 287 is a movie called Good Time, and it's a heist movie with Robert Pattinson. And
oh, yeah, how was that?
It's very raw and realistic.
Kind of Gonzo style, I guess, possibly.
No, I mean, in terms of the portrayal of the criminality of the characters,
okay.
It's a pretty outstanding showing from Robert Pattinson, though. Like, he is very much trying to remove himself from his Twilight days.
Now, do you count Netflix movies as movies?
Well, yeah.
Like, only released on Netflix?
Yeah. Okay. It's feature length, that's fine.
Okay.
Then before that, I watched Brawl in Cell Block 99 with Vince Vaughn. Probably the most intense performance of Vince Vaughn's career.
Not from Swingers? More so from
Swingers? Way more intense.
That's
way
so more, money, Travis.
It's so money you don't even know it. But it was a very impressive movie. But also a little bit harsh times, because it is a guy who goes to prison and then has
happy endings there.
Yeah, it's a rough one, but it's a very impressive performance. And then lastly, number 285 is a movie called Most Beautiful Island, about an immigrant from an unnamed country who's trying to survive in New York City despite all odds being stacked against her. And she's offered a proposal, which turns out to be far worse of a deal than she thought it was going to be. So that's the end of the 2017 Movie Marathon check-in, which brings us to the second movie in our recast. The recast continued. Movie number two is a movie called The Guns of Navarone from 1961. It was directed by a man named J. Lee Thompson, who also directed another Gregory Peck movie in 1962, the original Cape Fear. And he directed the second or third movie in the original Planet of the Apes series, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, in 1972. This movie has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Which one did you like more, Bridge Over the River Kwai or The Guns of Navarone, Travis?
I liked Bridge Over the River Kwai
a lot more. Yeah, definitely.
It was good. Yes. This movie is definitely three acts, and the first act and a half are a little bit hard to get into.
Yeah, it's a little slow
but
start.
But it does star three majorly iconic actors.
Oh, sure.
The first being Gregory Peck, of course, Atticus Finch, and much later in his career, Old Gringo. He was also in The Big Country.
Old Gringo.
Oh, yeah, he was Old Gringo in Old Gringo.
Right.
Really, really good film. He was also in The Big Country, really classic Western. Then also a guy named David Niven, who is... technically holds the title of the first person to play James Bond on screen because he was in a satirical version of Casino Royale. The first version
that came out before Dr. No?
It came out before Dr. No.
Wow, people really like James Bond.
It was a parody of James Bond, and he played Sir James Bond 007.
Okay.
And there was also other people who played James Bond in the movie, including Woody Allen and Peter Sellers.
Wow.
But they were playing different versions of the character. It's a really crazy movie. It's worth checking out, but it is non-canonical in terms of the James Bond franchise.
Okay.
Then we also have Anthony Quinn, who was 46 at the time, and he is a character actor. He was a Mexican-American actor, but he's playing a Greek, a Greek soldier in this movie, which is kind of racist. Well, just like somebody ethnic.
It was the early 60s.
Yeah, but also Anthony Quinn he's got a lot of credits to his name. A lot of them I'm not going to be able to recall right now, but there's a movie with Keanu Reeves called A Walk to Remember, and I'm pretty sure he plays the grandfather who owns the vineyard in that.
He plays Keanu Reeves' grandfather?
No, Keanu Reeves is an American soldier in Tuscany.
Okay.
And I'm not going
to
explain
this
plot.
Movie to me, Travis. Come on. If we're not here for you explaining movies, then what are we here for?
So, a little bit more about the film. We should talk a little bit about the plot of the film. It's called The Guns of Navarone from 1961, but it's set in 1943 during World War II, and a small commando team, not unlike the team that was sent back to blow up the bridge on the River Kwai, is sent to destroy huge German guns on the fictional Greek island of Navarone in order to rescue 2,000 Allied troops that are trapped on the island of Keros. Led by British Major Franklin, the team includes American Mallory, played by Gregory Peck, Greek resistance fighter Stavros, played by Anthony Quinn.
He's the one that swore to kill him? Is that right, or is that a different character?
Sworn to kill Gregory Peck's character.
Yes.
And reluctant explosive experts Miller, played by David Niven. Facing impossible odds, the men battle stormy seas and daunting cliffs. And when Franklin is injured, Mallory takes command, and personal animosities spill over.
Corrections department.
Yeah. And so it's based on an actual campaign during World War II called the Dodekans campaign, which took place in the Aegean Sea. And a lot of the details have been changed, but it's based on actual events. So the first role is Captain Keith Mallory, played by Gregory Peck, who was 45 at the time.
You went first last time.
Who do you got?
Whoops, I'll go first this time. I just tapped the mic.
Mark was
so adamant about this. So there's a long history of British people playing Americans. So I went with a British guy. This guy has that reserved cool. He plays Seely Confidence. In the Kingsman movie, I chose Colin Firth.
Oh, okay.
To play Gregory Peck.
Nice. I like it. I'm going with a little bit younger actor. Colin Firth's in his 50s now. I'm going with a younger... He's not a Brit, but he can do a British accent because he's an Australian.
Well, Gregory Peck was American.
Well, Greg... Oh, you're right. Shit. All right. So he can do an American accent.
Because he's an American guy.
No, he's Australian.
Oh, right. That's what you just said.
He's an Australian, so he can do an American accent. And he is named Hugh Jackman. And if you look at the face...
Are you sure you're pronouncing that right?
Hugh Jackman.
I think that's it, yeah.
Hugh Jackman. Mm-hmm. Hugh Jackman, he's 49 now, but we've just seen him in Logan.
Old Wolverine.
And he kicked ass in that.
It's
he
all roided
kick
up.
Ass in that. In this, Gregory Peck's character was supposed to be an accomplished mountain climber.
Yes,
which is why he's on the team.
Mm-hmm. And he's good at German and another language,
yeah.
I believe.
Australian.
That's right.
So
Gregory Peck.
Those are our picks for the first role. Second role is Corporal Miller, the reluctant explosives expert. And he was 51 at the time. I'm going with an actor who was also in Kingsman: The Secret Service. He is named Mark Strong. I know you love that name.
That's a great name.
But he
very
is,
respectable.
Shit, I forget the character's name in Kingsman: The Secret Service. But he's the taller guy with the very close-cut hair who's kind of like in charge behind the scenes.
Okay, sure, yeah, yeah.
He's got a code name in the movie.
He's kind of the Q type, or he's a trainer in the spy school
a
bit.
Yeah.
I never saw the sequel. Did you see the sequel to Kingsman?
Is it out yet?
I think it is.
Okay, I do want to see it.
Okay, for my choice,
yes.
These guys, they just have similar mustaches, so I chose Cary Elwes, the star of The Princess Bride.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's right.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As soon as you said mustache, I immediately started thinking about... Hercule Poirot.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, famous mustache.
All right. So how old is this guy?
This guy is currently 55.
55?
That's totally within the realm of that stuff. Yeah,
absolutely.
Famous for his tiny mustache and smarmy behavior.
Gotcha. That's good. The other role that David Niven, that I know of, for him is that he was also in the Pink Panther franchise.
Oh, yeah, that's
opposite
true.
Opposite Peter Sellers.
And so he's played some comedy.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
and that guy's arguably comedic in The Princess Bride. Kind of comedy action, I would say.
Yeah.
Comedy, fantasy action.
This wasn't a comedy.
No, but you were just talking about the Pink Panther.
Yes.
I'm saying the
drama. Yeah. You got it. I see. You're drawing the parallels.
I'm connecting those dots. It's good.
All right. So the third and final actor that we're going to recast from The Guns of Navarone is the role of Anthony Quinn, who was 46 at the time. He played Colonel Andrea Stavros, and he was a Greek soldier who was part of the team. He had previously been part of the defeated Greek military. And as you mentioned, he's the one who swore a death vendetta against Mallory, right?
Yes, because Peck's kindness got his family killed.
Right.
Yes, got Niven's family killed.
Mallory's kindness.
Right.
So am I going first?
Sure.
Going first?
Yeah, go for
it. All right, so as we mentioned before, Anthony Quinn was a Mexican-American actor, and they used him to play a Greek person just because he had a vague ethnic quality. I went with an actual Greek-American actor.
Ooh.
One who I think has the same kind of face quality in terms of...
Shape of face,
but also just
shape
like
of face.
A similar looking guy, but his name is Billy Zane.
Billy Zane,
yeah,
okay.
Billy Zane is a Greek American. He's 51 now, a little bit older than Anthony Quinn's 46. He is of Greek descent. People would know him from The Phantom, also the kind of asshole boyfriend in Titanic. And various other things.
All that stuff.
Not excluding Zoolander. So Billy Zane is my pick for the Anthony Quinn character of Andre Stavros.
Well, I went the same way of Hollywood, and I chose Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem would be so good in this.
Who's aged 48, so yes. Somewhat close.
Yeah, it's super close. That's a really good pick. It's almost as strong as my Billy Zane pick. But
I'm not so sure now.
I think it makes up for some of your other ones.
Some of my other ones. My awesome picks.
All right. So with that, we are going to the wild card, which was selected by producer extraordinaire, the Canadian in your brain again, Andrew Tay. What's the movie?
The movie is a Civil War movie
from
1989.
Yes.
It's called Glory.
Glory from 1989. It's a great movie. I saw it when I was a kid, probably about the time that it was released, more than likely when it came to video. Don't think I saw it in the theater, but really, really great movie, directed by a guy named Edward Zwick, and it starred several people, but the three main roles, the ones that we're going to be recasting, are the roles of Colonel Shaw, who was portrayed by Matthew Broderick, and the role of Sergeant Major Rollins, who was portrayed by Morgan Freeman, and then the role of Private Tripp, which is just a funny name, and that role was...
Have you never known anyone named Tripp, Travis?
I think that Private Tripp.
Okay, sure.
It was portrayed by Denzel Washington in the film. So the basic premise of the movie is a white colonel who's new in the military during the Civil War is assigned to a post where he's the commanding officer of an all-black regiment of Union soldiers. And as you can imagine, even though they're fighting on the Union side...
They're fighting the prejudices of both the Union Army and the Confederate Army.
They are, but as you can imagine, they're also still taken advantage of and not given all of the...
not given their due.
Right. They have old shoes, their feet are bleeding, their uniforms don't fit if they have uniforms. Matthew Broderick's character, Colonel Shaw, comes in and sees the injustices that are happening and tries to make things as much right as he can. He also, in the movie, realizes that through certain strategies the army is trying to use his troops, his black troops, as human shields in some situations. So it's a really solid movie. Matthew Broderick is the idealistic young white guy,
right,
kind of a fish out of water in this story. So with that in mind, I will go ahead and do my pick.
You went first the last two times, I think.
By all means, go.
All right, so I'll take Dan Stevens for the Matthew Broderick role.
Oh, yeah, he was...
Mr. Legion.
He was in Legion.
Mm-hmm.
He's also in the movie The
Guest.
The Guest.
The excellent movie.
Yeah, that's great. He's good. Yeah, that's better than mine. I kind of copped out and I went with Michael Cera.
Michael Cera in a war movie?
Yes, because he's young.
He's dead. He's
white,
already
and he's
dead.
He's idealistic.
And yeah, okay.
And that was the hardest one for me to pick. Even though I am a Caucasian, the hardest one for me to pick in this particular recast was the white guy. All right, so you're winning that one.
Okay.
For sure.
That makes up for my other picks, so
yes.
This will be great.
All right, so the next role is the kind of the elderly, too old for this shit character, portrayed by Morgan Freeman. It was Sergeant Major Rollins, and you just went, so I'm going first. I'm going with Idris Elba.
Always a good pick. Idris Elba is great in everything.
He's so good in so many things. He might be a little bit younger than Morgan Freeman, who we just found out was born in the 30s. but he would definitely pull it off.
Yeah, right. So I've got Denzel Washington as the older role. Yes, he can reprise a different role.
That is great.
For some stunt casting.
That is good.
He can play older black guy. Great.
Okay, yeah,
great.
That's better too.
Okay.
That's better too. Whew. Jesus Christ. Coming up with fucking, it. Fucking nailing it on this wild card.
Killing it.
All right, so which brings us to the hilariously named character, Private Trip.
So for Private Trip, I've got John Boyega from,
fuck you,
from the Star Wars.
That's my pick. It helps that he looks exactly like a young Denzel Washington.
A little bit, yeah, that does help.
Did you see my paper?
No, I did not see
damn
your paper.
It. All right, well, I guess that means you win the fucking wild card because you got the same one.
I didn't realize that someone automatically won if they choose the same one.
Well, they don't.
Oh.
I'm just saying you win.
Okay, great.
All right, that was intense, you guys.
That was super intense.
Well, do we need to say anything about the war movies or the...
How great they are and how we love war?
No.
Oh, wait, no, right.
Oh, you wanted to talk about how you loved Thor.
Thor was right. good. Thor sure, was I'll, good. I'll plug Thor, Ragnarok, yeah, that little indie gem.
Well, it's not time for plugs yet.
Ooh, okay.
It's time for me to thank the guests and ask them about their plugs. So thanks, Mark, for coming back on the show. And we hope to have you back here again soon.
Love being here.
And do you have anything that you want to plug?
No. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, I'll plug Carpenter Brute, the shirt I'm wearing.
Yes.
A fun industrial electronic band.
Wonderful.
With lots of pentagrams and things. They're good.
Yes. I also want to remind, once again, the listeners to please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can tweet at us on Twitter. We're at Cinema Chop Shop. You can get in touch with us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/CinemaChopShop. And then our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. I want to thank our engineer, Andrew Tay. He's in the house.
Yay.
But you're on the other side of the computer tonight, as opposed to last episode. It's a little bit different feeling, isn't it? Like you're out of the hot seat. Especially,
the spotlight.
Especially in the wild card. Andrew was feeling the heat on the wild card segment last episode. And so... also, I want to mention our next upcoming episode, which is going to be next weekend. It's going to be Thanksgiving movies. There's a bunch of them. I know you might not think there are, but there's a bunch of Thanksgiving movies. And thank you to you, the listeners, the Cinema Chop Shoppers out there. Keep on chopping. And
Cinema please, Chop Shop Nation.
Please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.